Welcome into another edition of the Dana Victory Podcast, only available on musketeerreport.com. I am Rick, and tonight I am joined by the legend, Brian Snow. Snow, I was thinking today, something brought this up, and I don't remember what it was.
I hope you weren't thinking too hard, and when you were doing it, you were sitting down.
I was in the car. Someone else was driving, so it was pretty safe. But I was wondering, what would, if you were a Major League Baseball player, what would your walk-up music be?
You know, that's an interesting question. It would have to be Informer.
I don't think I'm familiar.
You were real young. I mean, I was real young when it came out, but it was by a rapper named Snow.
Yo, Snow, they came around looking for you the other day.
Word, bust it.
Informer, you know, say that I'm a stormy, I'll go blam. I'll keep on bum bam. Take them on, say that I'm a stormy, stab somewhere down the lane.
Anyway, that was a terrible way to start a podcast. I apologize to all our listeners. Snow, we've got some recruiting stuff going on right now, and also we're just a few weeks away from the beginning of practice, so we figured we'd update everybody on recruiting and also get into some storylines about the current team, and we'll continue to do this over the next couple of weeks. But let's start with recruiting and start with that 2016 class. It's been a weird year for Xavier because while 2016 was an important class for them, they kind of, I mean, especially with Tyreek Jones, they got him committed really early. And then Quentin Gooden kind of happened. And after that, they're just kind of in the spot of they don't have to have anybody else necessarily. It's kind of either way they're going to go with the next guy they add. If they do add someone, it'll be a luxury get more or less. So it's kind of an interesting spot. Things have been really slow right now and just in this wait and see game. But it seems like, especially with Dylan Painter committing to Villanova, things are going to maybe start to turn a little bit here and the wheels will get moving in the recruiting cycle.
Yeah, I mean, it's just been odd because you figure like this time 6 months ago it was Xavier Simpson. It was Markel Fultz. It wasn't even Dylan Painter yet.
Yeah, Xavier Sneed, really.
Yeah, and it's just been a weird recruitment where, you know, Markel Fultz turns himself into a multi-year NBA All-Star all of a sudden. And then Xavier Simpson, it was like, we're tired of waiting around. We're going to go get that other really highly rated guy. You just don't see that very often.
Yeah, and I mean, I guess part of it is because you're not typically in this type of position where, for whatever reason, Xavier had sort of laid that groundwork with really good recruits early on. They had kind of a handful of guys that they knew they were in there really good with, and it made them really aggressive and really kind of decisive with the way they went, especially when you talk about that guard situation, Xavier Simpson and Quentin Gooden. Let's talk about where they're at right now, the guys they're still pursuing. Dylan Painter committed to Villanova. He's off the board. So that basically leaves X with Torian Thompson and Eddie Ekior in terms of big men. Torian Thompson visited a few weekends ago. He's since been to Seton Hall. He set a visit to Syracuse next week on the 25th, 26th. Where do things stand with him right now, in your opinion, Snow?
I mean, I still think Xavier right now is in the best position in the sense that the kid likes them the most right now. But that Syracuse visit, we've been down this road before. It's a tough one to say no to. So it's just tough to see the kid from New York City, close to his mom, probably dreamed of playing for Syracuse, going to Syracuse and saying, you know what, I'm going to go to a school a couple thousand miles away with one less national championship. It's just – it's difficult. So I think Xavier's in an enviable position in one respect and in a poor position in another respect.
Yeah, and I think that's just – what you're talking about is kind of just natural. It's the dichotomy of where Xavier's at in terms of recruiting kids from New York City and recruiting against Syracuse. That's just how things are going to be. That's the standard answer you're going to get about pretty much any kid we talk about when Xavier's recruiting from that area against Syracuse. But I will say at the time of his visit, when he left Xavier, from what I was told, it wasn't a situation where – he and Syracuse had been very serious to that point. It wasn't a situation where he felt really good, I don't think, or his family felt really good about the Syracuse situation. So, like you said, I think right now Xavier is definitely in the best spot. I think Syracuse has some work to do on this visit, but at the end of the day, I go back to what you said. I do agree. That's just what's going to happen. He's going to go on the Syracuse visit, and guess what? it's going to be really attractive, and they're going to be able to make up a lot of ground really quickly. So I think basically what you'll see is I don't think he'll commit on the Syracuse visit from what I've kind of gathered about him and his family and the way they're handling the process. But I think if you see something, like if he goes on that visit, then again, we're going to be the same way we were with the Xavier visit. Those next 3, 4, 5 days are going to be very telling. If he commits right away, I think it's pretty obvious, you know, he's going to be going to Syracuse. If not, then maybe Xavier's still in play. Maybe he didn't hear exactly what he wanted to hear at Syracuse. I don't know. But things will get interesting, I think, about a week after that Syracuse visit happens if he hasn't committed.
Yeah. I would compare it almost to when Xavier was recruiting Rashid Gaston against Dayton. And Dayton, you know, they had him on the visit first. And Dayton was really hoping to either get him on the visit or get past the Xavier visit about a week. Then they thought they would have a chance. Rashid committed, I think, 3 days after the Xavier visit. They knew if it was a quick commitment after the visit, they weren't getting him. I would say Xavier's in that same position with Syracuse, where if the kid's in a hurry to commit after the visit, that ain't going to be a good sign.
Yeah, and I mean, that's fairly standard with a lot of visits. So that's pretty much where things stand with Torian Thompson. I mean, it's not, you know, not great news for Xavier, but they're very much still in the thick of things. And I think they have a good relationship with Torian and his family already, whereas Syracuse really didn't have that. They kind of really slow played this recruitment. They offered so late in the process. I think there is some massaging to do there in terms of how they've approached this and explain to him where he fits in their plans. But at the same time, they probably have an easier sell than Xavier does in terms of saying, hey, we need big men because of the situation they're in terms of the roster. So, you know, it's a lot of moving pieces, but it's going to be Syracuse and Xavier, I think. And Syracuse certainly, at the end of the day, probably has the upper hand in this one. Moving on, Eddie Ekior visiting Xavier this weekend. He's visiting Florida next weekend on the 26th for the Tennessee football game. XU and Florida had in-home visits with him on this past Sunday. Miami and Vanderbilt have also been recruiting him hard, still in the mix there. He recently announced that he's reclassifying to the 2015 class, looking to join a college mid-year in January. He wouldn't be allowed to practice until May, so he wouldn't start playing until the following season, Snow, or at least be eligible to start playing until the following season. This is kind of a weird deal right now. Again, this one has even more moving parts to it all of a sudden, and things are moving really quick. The process just got accelerated with him reclassifying. What are you hearing about this one?
Yeah, I'll be honest. I don't have a whole ton of concrete information at the moment. You know, obviously Xavier's been in there for a while, and they're getting this visit, which is nice for them. I believe he's going to go to Florida afterwards and then Vanderbilt the weekend after Florida, which would be October 3rd. But I don't know if he's a kid who could potentially commit on a visit. But Xavier likes him. I mean, they really like him. I kind of question the fit with him and Tyreek Jones, but, you know, I'm not in charge. My house is much smaller than Chris Mack's, so he gets to make that decision. But he's an athletic kid. He can rebound. He's tough. He can score a little bit. He's not a, you know, he still struggles to score, which is my concern. I don't know how well him and Tyreek can function together because neither of them is a scorer. But, you know, he plays the center. He plays the power forward. He has the size, athleticism, toughness that you're looking for. So, you know, it's a quality piece. I just question the fit a little bit, but Xavier seems to think he does fit. And, you know, that's what honestly matters.
Well, I do think it's interesting. You are seeing the staff. I mean, if there's those really unique talents, it has to be a Matt Stainbrook level offensive talent or have that unique ability in some way, they'll go ahead and still get that big man, the guy who can't move his feet, you know, who is a true center. But I think for the most part, when they're recruiting post players right now, and it really stood out in this year's class particularly, they want the guy who can move his feet, the guy who's light on his feet. If they're going to continue to hedge ball screens the way they do and play this defensive system, they need guys who can move a little bit better, and especially even off offense. They're getting up and down the court. They're running a lot. Their big men are constantly coming out and setting screens. This makes sense to have mobile big men that are light on their feet. I think this works very well in Chris Mack's system, but I do completely agree. I mean, his skill set is very redundant with Tyreek Jones. So it'll be interesting if this is the guy that they are able to get. And, you know, it's clearly they've already decided they'd like to add him. So I don't think it's like one they're going to turn down at some point if they can get him. But if this is the guy they can get, I am very interested to see, okay, how will that work out with Tyreek Jones? And part of that is just the fact that I simply haven't seen Eddie play as much. You know, he's a Canadian kid, and he played for CIA Bounce, which was Cimbalar's old AAU team, but that just wasn't a team I had seen as much the last 2 years on the AAU circuit, so I just am not as familiar with his game. So there's a little bit more there for him to prove to me personally, not that he cares at all, but in my mind, to rationalize all this, yeah, I'd need to see a little bit more of how him and Tyreek are going to work together. But separately, I like both pieces from everything I know.
Yeah, I mean, they're both good players. I don't want anyone thinking I'm saying, you know, this kid isn't good enough. That's most definitely not what I'm saying. It's just I wonder about the fit long term. But, you know, the theory is get good players and make it work.
Yeah, I mean, having a couple tough, strong, athletic dudes that can rebound and dunk and block shots isn't a bad thing to, you know, build your post around. But hey, you better have some skill somewhere on that lineup. So I'll trust the coaching staff to figure that out if that's the route they choose. Moving on, kind of the third guy in this class that's really a primary target, I think we'd say. And that's not to say that there aren't a few other guys still getting attention. There aren't a few other guys that could still pop up as more serious targets. But right now, I think there's three main guys, and that's Torian, Eddie, and Xavier Sneed. And Xavier Sneed is visiting Xavier on the 25th, 26th. He visited K-State 2 weekends ago, Illinois the weekend before that. It seems like it's basically come down to these three schools, Brian, but we felt pretty confident about a month ago that it was like Illinois, Kansas State, and then Xavier a little bit behind in that order, and now that seems to potentially be changing.
Yeah, I almost think it's been flipped. I'll be honest. I think Xavier might be in the best spot right now with Kansas State real close in second and Illinois in third. Now, that's not written in stone by any stretch, but I had someone who's pretty close to the AAU program tell me he thinks Illinois is in third in this battle, which kind of surprised me. And there's been a groundswell with Xavier recently, Xavier University, for Xavier Sneed. Mac had the in-home on the first day that they were allowed. I think that was last Wednesday. Steele was in St. Louis today with Sneed, also with Illinois head coach John Gross, who was the best man at his wedding. So that had to be interesting. And, you know, but Xavier's, they're going to get the visit. Everyone says the visit's happening. What's interesting is I almost think Xavier could have pushed up the visit to this weekend, but they chose not to because they want to have a visit even further removed from the Illinois visit, even further removed from the Kansas State visit. So this is when Xavier's going to get him, 25th and 26th. They're going to hope to ride that momentum and get a decision afterwards. Sneed's a really athletic kid. What I think you're seeing Xavier view him as is, hey, when we want to go small, we're going to play him at the four because he's so athletic, he can guard anybody. He's tough, he's strong, he rebounds. And then they think down the road he can be a good shooter. He's not going to be a good shooter to start, but his mechanics are fine. He's a football player, a really good one, wide receiver. You know, an athletic kid who's just never relied on his jump shot and is starting to get a little bit better. And, you know, playing on an AAU team with Jason Tatum, with Tyler Cook, with, you know, a whole host of talented prospects, he's not going to get much of a look on offense. So, you know, the offensive game is behind the defensive game with him. But when you have Trayvon Blewett, J.P. McCarron, and Miles Davis, who are not exactly known for their defensive prowess, an athletic, versatile defender like Sneed on the wing who can play 2, 3, and 4, that's what they want in this class.
Yeah, so that's my thing with Xavier Sneed. He did not stand out at all on the AAU circuit this year. I think that's the best way to put it. It wasn't that he was bad, and he had some good moments. But like you mentioned, that St. Louis Eagles team is loaded, and he was never going to be asked to be a scorer on that team. So when you're going out and looking at the prospects, a lot of people aren't going to see him jump out at you unless you were specifically looking for, you know, an athletic wing defender. And to me, why it makes so much sense for Xavier, even if this guy, and that's Xavier University, even if Xavier Sneed never develops that offensive game the way they hope and think he can, is that he is so different from anything else they have on the roster right now. He is the opposite of what they have on the wing currently.
Exactly. And I want to clarify, this is Xavier Sneed, unlike Xavier Simpson. And I still think the Catholic people need to make a decision on how to pronounce the Saint's name.
Yes. Hashtag snow rant. but Xavier Sneed, as you mentioned, so athletic, To me, he always reminded me, and his offensive game never developed, his skill never developed this way at all. So don't think I'm comparing the two players. But in terms of his body, his athleticism, and mainly his body control, he almost reminded me of like a Gary Harris. When you watched Gary Harris on the basketball court, he Sneed's a little bit bigger, but that's, you know, the wide receiver type body where he's just excellent body control, just graceful on the court, glides through the air when he goes up to rebound, those types of things. He has all of that in the physical package, and so I think he has a lot of upside. But yeah, his offense is certainly lagging behind his defense at this point, but at this point, I think it'd be a great addition for Xavier, again, simply because he is so different from what they currently have on the roster.
And I'll get crushed for saying this because people, you're comparing him to a Dayton player. But just remember when Dayton, at the end of the Brian Gregory era, they had like a shooting guard in Marcus Johnson and then Chris Wright as the 3-4. Sneed's kind of halfway in between those guys. You know, he's the 6-5 version of Chris Wright and Marcus Johnson. And you can find a place for that guy on the court.
Yeah. Yeah, he's definitely a guy I like, but just understand that this is going to come with some work on the offensive end. He's not going to be a guy who's a skilled offensive player right out of the gate. Moving on, Snow, let's take a look at 2017 class, because we really haven't hit a ton on this class yet, because we just didn't know what position Xavier was going to be in heading into 2017, because there were multiple ways this 2016 class could have gone, and there still really is, depending on who they potentially add going forward. But for right now, let's assume they don't add either of the big men or Sneed, and let's just say, you know, they're going for about probably three spots in this 2017 class. What direction do you see this class heading in?
I think they're definitely going to take a big. I think the first big, if you were to ask, would be Derek Culver out of Warren Harding High School, the same school that produced Rashid Gaston. Xavier's been up to see Culver at least once, maybe twice already. He was on an unofficial visit. West Virginia is probably the biggest competition right now, if I had to guess. Illinois also. I would say Xavier, Illinois, West Virginia, Purdue are the three you're going to hear the most. Ohio State, not so much. They've showed him no attention. They can't take a power forward or center in that class. They already took Caleb Wesson. Do not worry about the Buckeyes with Derek Culver. Michigan State could become a factor, but you got Xavier. Right now, Xavier, West Virginia, Purdue. Those are the three I would focus on with Culver. Then, you know, a couple kids from Indiana, kind of the quote-unquote home runs. You know, the kids maybe you shouldn't get. Chris Wilkes, small forward from Indianapolis. Everybody's going to want him. They're going to have to beat out Kentucky, Stanford, potentially Duke, Louisville for Wilkes. That's going to be a long recruitment. Then Jaren Jackson from Park Tudor High School, same school that produced Trayvon Blewett. He's a face-up power forward, has a chance to be a pro. 6'9", can really shoot the ball, needs to get tougher. But, you know, he'd be one at the forward position if you're looking for a home run. Then I think they're definitely going to want someone who can really make shots. And to me, that'd be Danny Lewis from Georgia or Miles Kale out of Delaware. Both of them are good athletes who can shoot and just really score. And the reason you need more of a scorer in the backcourt in that class is, let's say they do get Sneed. Sneed's not a scorer, and Quentin Gooden's not a shooter. So you'd want someone who can be between them and stretch the defense.
Well, yeah, I mean, I think when you look at this class, if they're going for three spots, and that's always a fluid number, you know, that can certainly be changed. But my guess is right now, that's sort of what they're thinking in their head is three guys in that class. Center is a must. They have to add a center or a guy who can play center. You know, I don't know how important getting that quote unquote traditional center or space eating back to the basket guy is anymore. I think, as you mentioned on the board, you could have Tyreek Jones playing center in the future as an undersized guy. Really, I think that the basketball positions are changing a little bit and it doesn't really matter quite as much anymore. But anyway, they need to find a guy who can play the center for certain. So that means a big post. And then I think they add two wings in this class. I mean, I just don't think they're going to. They definitely don't need a four, you know, like a hybrid guy. That's definitely not going to be a necessity. They've already added multiple of those types. And then really at the guard spots, when you look at what they're going to have, I think with Larry Austin and Edmund Sumner and Quentin Gooden already in the fold for the next 2 years, I think they probably need to add, like you said, an absolute dead-eye shooter on the wing. And then probably another type of wing. I mean, you're going to be having two seniors in Trayvon Blewett, JP McKira, that are those type of players in this class. So moving forward, you're going to need someone to take the reins on the wing. And while you're going to have some bigger guards in Quentin Good and Edmund Sumner that can certainly slide around and be versatile between those three backcourt positions, I think definitely adding wings is going to be a priority in 2017.
Yeah, you know, I mentioned Wilkes, obviously, and Miles Kale and Danny Lewis. I'll also look at from New England, Kamani Lawrence. That's a kid Luke's been on. Jalen Seabury picked up his offer in August after Xavier saw him. He's a kid from Hopkinsville, Kentucky. So those are some names. Chuma Akeke, also from Georgia. He's really good friends with Danny Lewis. They're high school and AAU teammates. I wouldn't be shocked if they were to visit Xavier together. There's a lot on the board right now in that regard.
Yeah, it's really difficult to start narrowing down your primary targets and start talking seriously about who's going, what specific names are going to be the guys in this 2017 class this early, especially when they haven't finished the 2016 class, they haven't even gotten into practice for this 2015 season, and a lot of the, you know, those two things are really going to dictate who they're going after in 2017. So really next spring is when we'll have a better idea of what names are becoming the priorities. But as you mentioned, some of the home run names that they've already been recruiting really hard, we already know. And then there's some other guys that are clearly going to be targets. But again, we'll continue to monitor the situation a little more closely as we get through this season. Snow, we wanted to, again, it's 3 weeks before they start practice. I believe October 3rd, Monday, October 3rd, is going to be the first day of practice for X. We wanted to take some time, first of all, just to do a little preview about, you know, who we think are going to start, those the typical things. We've kind of already discussed this on the board some. But then also, we want to take each of the next 3 weeks, we're gonna do a podcast, and we're going to talk about one position group and kind of give a detailed overview of that position group. And this week, we'll start with the big men. So, first of all, we want to talk about just the starting lineup, how we see this playing out. And I think I've been pretty consistent on this the whole time. I don't know if you've changed your mind at all with the way things are going to go, but at least to start the year, I think the starting lineup is absolutely going to be Miles at the point, Remy at the two, Trayvon at the three, Jalen at the four, and James at the five.
Yeah, I agree 100%. And what's interesting about that is it's potential that their best player won't be in the starting lineup in Edmund Sumner.
Right. And that's why I say to start the year. Because yeah, there's, you know, by game 10, there's no doubt in my mind that Edmund Sumner could find his way into the starting lineup. I just don't think there's any way they start the season with him there. And even if he does end up being the best player right off the bat, and it's very clear, I still think they keep him on the bench for a little bit just to, you know, just to keep every, you keep your seniors on the court, you get off to that start, you take some pressure off of Edmund, all that type of stuff that coaches do. That's the way I expect it to play out, but I completely agree that Edmund could be, you know, from what we've heard, potentially the best player on this year's team.
Yeah, and what's interesting about this is Trayvon Blewett and Miles Davis, first, they're never going to be known as lockdown defenders. That's never going to happen in a million years. But both of them, and everybody will say this, they're in the best shape of their life. I believe Miles is around like 187 pounds or something like that. Trayvon's at like 203. I mean, those are big differences for those guys. Miles ran a 5:47 mile, which for him, you know, which for me would be absolutely ungodly. I'd be dead. But, you know, he can't come close to that 2 years ago.
No.
So he's in the best shape of his life, and that's going to help him move a little bit better this year. And I think he's ready to take that next step. And I think he's probably really the leader of the team this year. So you want him on the court starting for sure, not taking Remy off. And then, you know, I think Trayvon's primed for a breakout year as well, because I think some of that freshman inconsistency and just learning what it takes to be a basketball player at a high level day in, day out, Trayvon learned that last year.
Yeah, and I think just going back to Miles with what you were saying about him being in shape, I think too, being two full years removed from the knee trouble that he was having, that he was kind of dragging that thing around, just that time in the mile kind of shows that he's not being hampered by that anymore. You know, I think he's not the mentally toughest guy and physically toughest guy, especially when he first came in. I think it took some time to sort of battle through some of that nagging injury stuff, and that sort of limited his ability to condition himself in the offseason. But I think that's the biggest thing that this offseason has shown me about him, is that he's fully healthy and completely ready to go. And it certainly shows it with his physique right now. But we'll talk more about, you know, the guards as a position group when we get to that specific podcast. Let's jump into the position group that we're going to talk about tonight, and that's the post. And to me, I think when you look at this, it's, you know, Jalen and James, as far as the two starters, to me, have a very good chance of being the best two big men, the best two starting big men, you know, that Chris Mack has had in a lineup. Now, last year's, when you – Jalen never really started, but if you factor in that it was like Matt and Jalen, those are two really good big men too. So, obviously, you're coming off that year where it was – it's pretty tough to compete with. But I think – defensively, especially what they're going to miss from Matt offensively, they're going to make up so much for on the defensive end. I don't know if it'll work out that way initially. It might take some time for that to even itself out. But by midway through the season, when they figure out who they are on the offensive end and some of those other, you know, the wings and the guards and guys like Edmund Sumner get going, I think it's really going to show how important the defense of these two starting big men, Jalen and James, are, and the way they defensive rebound the ball and all of that stuff. I think that's going to be huge for this team. I think they're going to be really consistent.
Yeah, I mean, yeah, I don't think it's absurd to think that they're going to be the number one and number two rebounders in the conference.
No, James has been the best rebounder on the team every year he's played. You know, I mean,
yeah,
like
per minute.
Yeah, I mean, when we're talking about rebound rate, he's ridiculous. He always has been a ridiculous rebounder. So him seeing as many minutes as he'll see in his career this year, in terms of minutes per game, I think he's absolutely going to be in the top three or four rebounders in the conference. And then I think we all expect Jalen to be there. So at worst case scenario, I think they're two of the top five guys.
And where this is important is that takes away possessions from the other team. I think people just look at rebound margins. It's not a stat that makes sense the way people use it. Like, oh, they're plus 12 on the boards. They're minus six, you know, and it just doesn't correlate that way. But when you are a plus rebounding team, especially defensive rebounding, you're taking an added possession away from the other team. And if you score 1.2 points per possession, and you only let you cut five possessions off the other team by not letting them get offensive rebounds, that's, you're saving 6 points. Like, that's a big deal. So, you know, I think people underestimate just how important defensive rebounding is to really getting stops, because when you get an offensive rebound, odds are you're going to score, like, I don't know what the number is. You know, coaches will say 2/3 of the time. It probably isn't that high, but you're going to score at a much better rate than you do on the first shot. So the defensive rebounding these guys are going to do, and both, even though Matt was good at it, he's not as good as these two. I think that's going to help the defense as well.
Hashtag math with snow. Specifically talking about Jalen, you know, I think a lot of people, the instinct is to say, oh, he's got to be more consistent. They've got to be able to rely on him, all of this. To a certain extent, you know, maybe the occasional don't get frustrated and get a technical or something. There's a few instances last year where I think you can absolutely say something like that. But for the most part, when you look at his numbers and you look at his performances in the year he had last year, he was pretty damn good already last year. And that was somewhat being limited at times in terms of his minutes. Like, there were times last year we probably didn't play as many minutes as he could have. And part of that is because they had to have Matt on the floor for X amount of minutes, or they had to have, you know, Trayvon on the floor for X amount of minutes, or they couldn't play two bigs because of the other team's lineup and Matt had to be in the game. So I think at times his minutes were limited, and he still put up pretty consistent numbers, had a great year. I don't think Jalen, you know, a lot of people, again, are going to say he needs to become more consistent going into this year. I don't know that he necessarily does. I just think as long as he doesn't foul, he can stay on the court, which last year he did a pretty good job of. He's going to be great. Like, I don't think there needs to be a big jump here for Jalen to be a first team all conference player.
Yeah, I mean, he's just got to. When people say consistent, I hope what they mean is stay on the court, because if he stays on the court, he's going to produce.
Yeah, and I mean, really, last year I don't think that was as big of an issue for him. Like, I don't think he was found himself in foul trouble constantly or fouling too quickly to where he had to come out of the game. You know, there was the occasional loses cool moment, but really that wasn't even as bad last year. And for the most part, I mean, the big games where they needed him, you know, the Arizonas, the Georgia States in the tournament, those types of games, you know, the Villanovas, he showed up in those games. He was not the guy holding this team back in primetime games. He really showed up in all those. I think that'll continue. I think Jalen Reynolds is going to have one of the better seasons by a Xavier big man that we've seen coming up this year. I expect him to have a magnificent season. But I think the big thing that we're going to be talking about this year, and maybe we won't talk about it as much, but it'll be huge, is I think James Farr is going to have an unexpectedly good year. Like, people are really down on him after last year, and understandably so, because he just couldn't put the ball in the basket. He did everything else pretty well, blocked shots. Especially, he got better as the season went on, and he kind of got comfortable in a role. They found some regular minutes for him in conference play. He was better in conference play than he was the rest of the season. His defensive rebound rate was through the roof. He just could not put the ball in the basket. And that was at the free throw line. That was around the rim on stick backs. You know, on two-pointers, he shot 48.6%. From three-point, he was god-awful, 28.9%. But this is a guy who just a year ago shot 61.1% from two-point range and 38% from three-point range. He can bounce back. Now, he's always been an iffy free throw shooter, but he can bounce back in terms of making shots. And quite honestly, if he does that, and just sees a few more minutes this year, which he's going to, I think he's going to have a really nice year and a really complimentary game to what Jalen brings to the table.
Yeah, I mean, I think he might only average 6-7 points a game, but if you got a guy, your fifth option on offense, averaging 6 or 7 and getting you 8 to 10 rebounds, that's a heck of a season.
Well, and just think if he goes back to being the guy who shoots 38% from three, and he's the pick-and-pop threat that he was in the Crosstown Shootout 2 years ago. You know, where he hits two big threes in that first half and helps Xavier build that big lead up.
Yeah.
You know, that matters. I mean, having a guy like that that can do that type of thing matters. And I'm not saying he will do that, but last year during practice, he never stopped shooting the ball. Like, this was not a thing where he's a fluke shooter in 2014 and he's never really been a decent three-point shooter. He's always been a good three-point shooter from what I've seen. He's continued to do that in practice. And for whatever reason last year, I think he lost some confidence early on during the season. Well, in fact, I know he did. You can tell by the way he was playing most of the season last year that he had no confidence in his shot. And really, quite honestly, they told him to quit shooting the ball. And so he was second-guessing himself every time he looked for a shot, too. I expect that to get better. It's a senior year. It's a what do I have to lose at this point situation for him. He's going to be on the court. It's not like they aren't going to play him minutes. I expect a good year from James Farr, but that sort of brings us to the next point. If he does slip, if he's not playing as well, or just possibly Sean O'Mara plays better, I think there's a good chance Sean O'Mara can eat into these minutes. I think the staff is ready to see that if Sean's ready to produce at that level. They have no issue playing him more minutes as he proves himself. What's your take on Sean O'Mara heading into the season? What type of opportunity do you think he has ahead of him?
I think the staff ideally would like to be able to play him 15 minutes. I think they wanted to play him 5 to 10 minutes a game last year. They felt he was going to be productive in that role. They just didn't have those 5 to 10 minutes to give him with Matt, Jalen, and James.
Right.
Now that he's into the quote-unquote James role, I think they're more than comfortable with him getting 10 to 15 minutes a night.
Yeah, I mean, theoretically, if he's in the James Farr role of last year, Farr played 12.3 minutes per game. I'm with you. I think Sean O'Mara could easily see over 15.
Yeah, I mean, it'll depend on who's got the hot hand, you know.
Sean's and what
a little
matchup
bit more gifted
playing
scorer than James is. You know, is Sean have it working? You know, Sean's going to rebound, not like James does, but he's going to rebound. So I just think it's going to be interesting to see as the year goes along. You know, do you ride the hot hand a little bit? You know, who's got it? If James is shooting 38%, he's not coming off the floor. You know, if he's shooting 38% from three. So I think part of that's going to depend as well.
We are talking about bodies and guys who have sort of changed their look earlier with Miles Davis and Trayvon Blewett. Sean O'Mara is another guy that you could throw in that group, and it's really, I think, just sort of happened over this summer. The July-August portion of this summer, he's really put a lot of work into his body and started showing up. I mean, he's looking pretty slim in terms of his midsection, but pretty cut up at this point. I mean, he's a big, strong guy, but at this point, his midsection is very thin, his waist is thin. I think he's another guy who has really sort of figured it out in terms of the weight room. That's what it comes down to. I mean, you're going to get bigger, stronger, in better shape no matter what in a college weight program, but at some point you also start to figure it out on your own and start to understand how to push yourself and really see big gains. And I think he's getting to that point now where, you know, it's not his freshman year anymore where he was just trimming some baby fat and getting stronger. He's to the point where he's getting pretty cut up now, and that's going to be big even just for him in practice going against Jalen. Last year that was brutal for him to have to go against Matt, Jalen, and James every day. This year he'll be able to hold his own, and he's a kid who doesn't lack for confidence or toughness. He's going to keep going back at you even when he fails, and I think practicing against Jalen and James every day only makes him better. I think he has the chance to be productive, which is going to be important because you need a third big man, and after these three, I really don't like, to me, I think Trayvon Blewett still plays a decent amount at the four on this team, because I really don't know what to expect out of Mackende London. And obviously Kaiser Gates is just a freshman.
Yeah. I have enough confidence that Kaiser and Mackende are going to be fine. I don't know necessarily what fine means, but that they're going to be able to play. So I'm not sure how much Trayvon's going to see at the four. I'm going to be honest on that one.
It'll be interesting to see, but my thing is this for Mackende or Kaiser. This year is going to be like sneaky important to both of those guys, whether they realize it or not. I know Mackende wasn't even a factor to get minutes last year, but he's going to be thrown into this position where he's supposed to be better at this point. He's supposed to be a little bit ahead of the curve. And if he comes in and he's behind Kaiser, or you know, not ready to contribute, especially mentally, he's going to find himself in trouble, I think, in terms of his long-term future. And it's not that he doesn't have potential. It's not that he's going, you know, the coaches are going to give up on him right away. But I just look at this team realistically, and I think, okay, so you've already got Tyreek Jones, who we expect to play a significant role coming in, you know, next year in the future. You're already building these future big men for the four and the five position. If you can't find minutes now as Mackende, where do you find minutes going forward? Because Kaiser's going to make a jump from freshman to sophomore year. If he's already ahead of you now, then you're going to have a hard time finding minutes if you're Mackende London. So I think these two are going to be battling it out this year for that role, that kind of hybrid role that gets to see minutes at the four. And whoever wins out is going to have a huge edge up going forward for the rest of their career, because I just don't know that there's a ton of room for two guys at that hybrid position, unless one of them transcends that role. Meaning, unless Mackende becomes good enough that he's legitimately a 6'10 contributor that can rebound, block shots, defend guys, do all these things in addition to just being a shooter, or Kaiser is a 3-4 that can legitimately go guard scoring wings out on the perimeter and do some things like that and be a better athlete. Unless either one of them get to that point, I don't see a future for two guys that do the same thing, which is basically shoot it from the four position.
Yeah, one thing you mentioned about Kaiser that's interesting, from what I've been told, if you were to ask the coaches who's got the best feet on the roster, meaning being able to move laterally, they'll say Kaiser Gates.
Well, that's impressive.
Yeah, so if Kaiser can be a, you know, you hear this in the NBA more, but a 3-and-D guy, meaning make threes and play D, does that mean he'll ever be a star? Maybe not, but he might be able to carve out that 3-and-D role, especially on this team and going forward. So that one's going to be interesting to watch, because they love his potential on his defensive end and the way he can move his feet.
Well, and quite honestly, the guy I've always compared him to is Justin Martin. And that's exactly what Justin Martin should have been, was a 3-and-D guy. He couldn't dribble, you know, didn't bring a lot offensively other than that spot-up three-pointer. But he was strong, he was tough. He could defend by the end of his career when he took personal challenges seriously enough and was locked in on the defensive end. He was a good defender and he could rebound. And I think Kaiser can do all those things. And he's certainly, you know, just going back to the two open gyms earlier in the year that I watched this summer, he looked more capable of playing multiple positions than Mackende London did. He looked like he had a chance to guard on the perimeter more than Mackende London. And Mackende's 6'10", so that there's a little bit of difference there, obviously. Mackende probably trends more towards helping you in the post, whereas Kaiser probably trends more to helping you on the wing, which makes sense. But again, unless one of those guys transcends being just a spot-up shooter from the four position, this year's going to be really important for who gets their head above the other one in terms of that role, if that's all they're ever going to be.
Yeah, and you know what? We might not know that until January. It's going to be interesting. You know, I think those two are really going to compete against each other. You know, they already do, but you know, once practice really gets going and, you know, who picks up the system more, who does what the coaches say, who's consistent every day, it's going to be fun to watch how those two battle it out.
Well, and the thing that'll be funny, you mentioned we won't know till January. It's right, because early in the season, they're going to play those blowout games and everyone's going to get in. So they're going to get their minutes, and who knows, you know, Mackende or Kaiser may have that 16-point game like Jeff Robinson did a couple of years. You know what I mean? Like, there's always those guys that sort of say, oh, man, this guy's figured it out. This is going to be his year. It'll take until we get into the real games, the competitive games, and possibly the conference season before we know if any of these guys are legitimately ready to help the team. And it's going to be interesting, but I think this year specifically, we talk so much about the guards and the point guard situation, and all that's going to be interesting. It's going to be the key. The big men aren't quite as interesting because we know who so definitively who are going to be the two starters in Jalen and James. But after that, I think it's a really fun year for Xavier fans because Sean O'Mara, I think, has the potential to be a very nice piece, a very solid piece going forward. And I think you're going to get to see his growth and see where he's at this year, which will be fun. And then McKinney and Kaiser, again, are really fun pieces to have. I think everyone was excited about their upside when they first committed to Xavier. But now it's sort of getting to that point where they're going to start competing, going head-to-head, and you're going to see what you've actually got from those two because after, you know, McKinney redshirted last year, he was kind of the forgotten piece to that recruiting class. So those two going head-to-head this year and sort of battling for minutes, I think, is going to bring out the best in each of them.
No doubt. I mean, it's going to be interesting. I mean, there's only so many minutes you have in the front court, and Xavier has a lot of bodies.
All right. Well, I think that does it for this edition of the Dana Victory Podcast. For the legend, Brian Snow, I'm Rick. Thanks for listening, guys. Bring me a car through my window, so they put me in the back of the car at the station. From that point on, I reached my destination, where the destination reaching out of east attention. Where the look down my pants, look up my bottom. So informer, you know, say that I'm a snowman, I go glam. I lick it, boom, boom, damn. Take them on the city, say that I'm a snowman, stop somewhere down the lane. I lick it, boom, boom, damn. Zipper noise.